Hello and welcome to another episode of Cross Court Conversations, your favorite tennis podcast. I'm here with Juan once again. We're about to jump in to some chat about Miami. But remember, before we get started, follow us on all our socials at Cross Court Conversations. We're super excited to get into this episode and talk about everything about the Miami Open, WTA, ATP. But first, I want to catch up with my boy, Juan. How you doing?
How's it going, Jason? It's awesome to be back. Sunshine Swing is officially behind us, but you know what that means. We're finally getting some sun in the Netherlands, baby. Let's go. It's getting warmer.
We sure are. It's sunny right now. Why are we recording this podcast when it's sunny outside? I don't know, because we're tennis addicts. It's sunny in the US, it's sunny here. Why not sit inside, watch tennis, and record a podcast about tennis?
Nobody can see where I am for all you know, like the listeners. Like, I'm in a hot tub right now. Although I guess
you never leave the depths of your room. it's normally pitch black in your room, even though it's light outside. Like, I know you're not leaving that stink box.
Yeah, I had to leave the room because, like, it's starting to get... I get the sun, like, the sun hits my room from, like, 12 until the sun goes down. I swear, I'm on championship weight, man, 155 pounds. Like, I'm just sitting there. I'm just sweating. I'm in the sauna every day. So today I made the decision to ditch the house for something a little bit cooler because, you know, when we're talking such hot takes like the ones we deliver, it's better to keep the body cool as well, right?
I don't know how hot my takes are going to be because I got to be honest again, listeners, I didn't watch that much of this tournament. The American times just do not suit me at all. But it's tough. I do have one spicy little take in there, which I'll throw out at one point. But first, we wanted to get into maybe some non-tennis related.
Oh, we're switching up the order.
We're switching up the order today. We're going non-tennis related first. So if you're not here for the tennis, you can get your Juan and Jason bullshit in and you can just get on out of here. Go enjoy the sun. Have a great time.
I don't know how much bullshit there is in the list where both of us are picking our top three American foods we want to try. Like, I feel like there's a lot of legitimacy behind this as two TikTok fiends as ourselves.
Top three American foods is what we're going to be doing today. Yeah, do you want to kick us off? Let's start at number three. Obviously, the reason we're doing this is because the competitions of the last 2 weeks have been in the United States. And I think I can say quite positively that I think we've both gone for three foods that none of the athletes would touch from a mile away. There's definitely no kale pancakes on the list, so Novak is not going to be in a good mood.
No, there are no kale pancakes on my list either. Actually, yeah, I think I would agree with you. I would be surprised if any of these athletes, maybe one of the things they might eat that I have on my list, but the rest I would be surprised. So I can kick us off with number three here. So my food that I mostly want to try for America, or at least my third food that I want to try the most for America, I don't know, that makes it a bit confusing, but you get what I mean. It's got to be the deep dish pizza, you know? I've always been so intrigued. Ooh. The deep dish. Yeah, is it a pizza? Is it a pie? What is that?
It's gluttonous. It looks amazing. I can't wait. I really want to grab it and just, I know it's steaming hot, but I want to stick it in my face and just burn my entire face.
Right? And off. I love the cheese bowl. It looks when I watch so those good. Videos, you know, the cheese bowl from the videos is insane. Yeah.
I would like to know, I want to get it in my hand so I can see the cheese to sauce ratio. You know, is it? Because, you know, pizza, normal pizza, you don't have an overwhelming amount of cheese on it. Actually, American pizza, you probably do. But, like,
yeah.
You know, is it really that cheesy? Is the sauce replaced with cheese? Is it like a cheese pie? Is that what I'm eating here?
That's the thing.
So, I'm all down. I'm getting.
Yeah, I'm super down. The only thing that I'm a little bit, like, on the fence about, like, is it pizza? I think it might be a pie, personally. But, you know, it's called deep dish
pizza. But it's a pizza pie.
But a pizza, yeah, but they see, call, so I
gotta
was
get
thinking
a pie.
About that. But that is surely an American term. Like, there's no way there are Italians. Like, Yannick Sinner is not going, ah, mamma mia, I want a pizza pie. Like, there's no way that he's saying that. Like,
No, not at all. Yeah, I was thinking about maybe, because I'm kind of making this up on the fly, just whatever comes into my mind at this very moment is going to be my number three on the list. And right, I was thinking New York pizza, but I'm not going to go with New York pizza because Chicago deep dish pizza is way more gluttonous. And I think I got to match that. So at my number three, I'm going to go with something that I really want to try. And that's a Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, yeah. Me too, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too.
I'm pretty sure you don't get any dishes in America that don't have cheese on them. It's just,
I think all my top three dish has cheese on it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just dish with cheese.
Yeah. It's like those burgers you see like on TikTok that are trending where like they just put melted cheese over a whole burger and it looks like the worst thing to eat because like I can't really eat it with a fork and knife. I can't really eat it with my hands. Like how the fuck am I supposed to eat that?
I mean, that's kind of the same deal with deep dish pizza. Like how, because you can't attack that like a normal pizza. You got to have a knife and fork.
Yeah.
Right?
Which already
and it's
kind of put your pizza points down in my opinion.
Hmm. Then you're heading more towards pie or even quiche territory. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. But Philly cheesesteak, it looks so greasy. It looks so good. It's like, it's cheese and steak in like a French baguette bread. Like it's looks fantastic.
I've also, one. Do you want to try the one with the cheese wigs? You know, like the fake cheese spray?
No.
You know what that
is? No. You know I can't fuck with any half cheese. Like I think once I was at your place and you brought out some Dorito cheese that came in a jar, and one of your roommates put it in the microwave and was like, "Oh, you got to try it. It's so good." Just the consistency alone is enough to send me to the bathroom and not come back.
It's the Dorito nacho cheese sauce for all our listeners wondering. It goes kind of hard if you heat it up. It's a little gelatinous, but it goes kind of hard.
Exactly. It's gelatinous and cheese should not be gelatinous.
No.
I was not a fan at all. But yeah, take us to your number two. What have you got?
Okay, number two, this is where we start going a little off track, right? So my number two is, if you're aware of this TikTok trend, the crockpot dips, you know, where they're just putting cream of mushroom with like cream of celery soup and like the exact Dorito nacho cheese dip that you just hated on. They're putting three of those, baby. There's like four or five of those cans in there. We're talking refried beans, all this dip, and then let it sit in the crock pot. Those big cheddar blocks, you know, where they're like, and now I put my cheddar and it's literally like child size block of cheddar. And by child size, I mean it's the size of a child, not that it's for children. And then they let that bad boy sit for 3 hours. Right, it's making your stomach turn because you're so hungry, right?
Wait. Why are they letting it sit for 3 hours? What's that going to do? Is it fermenting?
Yeah, exactly. That's to the crock pot vibe of letting shit sit, you know? And then I can make my crock pot dip, do my other stuff in between. And then by the time I'm back, my crock pot dip is done. Time to feed a family of 16. You know what I mean?
Like, have you ever heard of French onion dip, which comes in a packet and actually tastes good and is not made with a variety of soups, you know?
You just said package, though. I'm talking about real organic Campbell cream of mushroom.
Extra organic? You're talking about cream of mushroom soup. That thing, you got to cut a hole in the bottom for it to slop out of the jar, and it makes that disgusting noise when it lands in the thing. It's like, you know? No, I don't need that. Man.
I don't need that in my life. Everything you're saying right now is just making me hungry.
Even the
especially,
sound when it
especially
hits, like when it hits, like the
especially the
you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Because hold the jar above the thing and then they stick a knife in the bottom and it's like it just slowly comes out and then it'll just on the whatever they serve this in. I don't know.
Crock pot, bro. I really want to just get a Dorito chip and try that. Real bad. So that's my number two. Hate it. People hate on it, but crockpot dip from TikTok. What do you have a number two? Right.
Nice. Number two, I've gone with American diner food.
Like
it's way more subtle.
What specifically? They might they probably have crockpot dip there, bro. They definitely have crockpot dip at the diner.
No, what I want to do is I want to go out in America and go to a diner, a 24-hour diner at like 3 in the morning and just order the entire menu. You know, they got like the biscuits, they got eggs, they got omelets, they got anything you can pretty much dream up and they'll make it. It's probably just not even on the menu. They'll have the ingredients for it and you can just tell them, hey, whip that up. That's how you can get your crock pot dip thing. You just be like, oh, you got any cream of mushroom back there? You got any cream of chicken? And they'll be like, yeah, yeah, we got those. Oh, just put them in a little crock pot. And you got a crock pot? Yeah, we got a crock pot too. Yeah, we can do that for you, man. You want some meat in there or something like that?
They're like, oh, do you mean our number 29 special? We can just make that one instead because we already have that cream of mushroom crock pot dip. So you really just want to eat my
thing. It's been in the fridge. It's been in the fridge for 2 weeks and they have to remelt it so it gets less gelatinous.
Oh man, I'm starving now. The crock pot dip. But American diner, like I've been to the US like maybe 2-3 times and I had the privilege to visit a Denny's in LA and I have to say it lived up to all the hype. That was amazing. I love Denny's. I don't know what the reputation of Denny's is in the States, but as a foreigner coming to the States, it hit every spot I wanted, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair enough, man, but I don't know.
No crock pot.
Just your crock pot. Your crock pot thing is still just
yeah, it really threw you off, man. Let me take you to number one. So make you think number of something one. Else.
You've had two pretty questionable options so far. What do you got? Number one.
Okay. Well, first of all these things are edible because I've seen people put them in their mouths. Not that that's necessarily always a meaning of edible. But.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if we want to explore that any deeper. Things that you put in your mouth which aren't edible.
No. We're going to leave that there. But my number one thing. So you've seen those big pickles that come in a package? Like the massive ones that are like the size of a forearm. But I specifically mean not just the big pickle. I want to try the Sour Patch Kids blue pickle, the one that's completely blue. That's the one I want to try. That's my number one thing that I want to try from the States.
The humanity. Oh, dear God. What have they done to you? What's the internet done to you, man?
If you make something that blue, I'm going to try it. I'm a color guy. Blue Gatorade, blue Powerade, blue pickle. And the flavor is probably blue, man. Like, it doesn't have a flavor. It's just blue flavor. But I love blue flavor.
Blue flavor is pretty good. I got to say, blue Gatorade. We were talking about this the other night. Blue Gatorade kind of hits. Like, it's the best Gatorade. It's the best. Yeah. Yeah, it is really good.
I think if we
blue
did
pickle,
a
pickle, I don't know, man.
If we did a ranking of color flavors, I think blue would be at the top of the list. Like, blue flavor.
But yeah, I don't know. I think all of my options have been too food. You know, two actual food, you know, things that you could be like, oh, yeah, I actually want to eat that, you know.
I want to grab the pickle and dip it in the crock pot dip. That's what I want to do. Drink the juice after as well.
My number one is just boring now. I was going to say Texas barbecue. Like, no other reason except it looks fucking amazing.
It
like,
looks so good.
Give me like 50 pounds of meat, you know.
You know when they squeeze it when they squeeze it and that meat juice come out? Oh Lord, I wanna just put me at the bottom of that pit, man.
They just grab it with the gloves and kind of shred it up with their hands and it's just falling off the bone. Oh
a little blue pickle to cut through the fat. Oh what a meat. Little crock pot dip to dip the meat in. Oh man.
No. Hold it. No. I'll have some ranch dressing, maybe. You know, ranch dressing and pizza also.
Elite combo, I gotta say. And I think something about the Texas barbecue is also the sides always interest me. Like the mac and cheese, the cornbread, all the other stuff it comes with that is not really common for us to eat, like cornbread. Mm. I don't think I've ever had cornbread, but it looks amazing.
No. What is cornbread, bro?
I guess it's in the name. It's cornbread, bro.
I think it's probably quite sweet. It's quite sweet bread.
Yeah. I would assume so, right? Because American corn in general is quite sweet.
Just American food in general is probably quite sweet.
I imagine that blue pickle is so sweet, to be honest with you, and it's a pickle.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we've spent more than enough time talking about questionable food options. Well, mine were just normal. Yours, on the other hand, One of our friends was talking about how our generation is more susceptible to bowel cancer the other week. And, oh no, was it colon cancer?
It was colon
because
cancer.
Of the fact that we're, yeah, the foods that we eat aren't up to par. She's talking about you, man. She's talking about your category. You're a high risk category for colon cancer with the shit
really,
you want to put in your body.
I actually disagree because I'm eating pickle, which is a vegetable, and the crock pot has mushroom and cream of celery in it. So that's another two vegetables. So like, and my third choice was deep dish, which has tomato on it. So I don't think she was talking about me.
Nah, bro. Nah. High risk factor. Go to the doctor. If you want to follow that diet, if you want to tick that bucket list off, go to the doctor afterwards. Get a colonoscopy and make sure everything's okay up there.
And if you have tried the blue pickle, please hit me up and tell me what it tastes like. Or even better, send us one.
We can probably get you one for when the US Open's on, right?
Oh,
we'll do a
man.
Little callback and we'll order you a blue pickle in to have and see how it actually goes. Maybe we can post a little video about it as well. I'm sure the audience will love it.
Oh, they would love that. I'm super. Yeah, let's do that. Let me try the blue pickle on camera, man.
Bro, can't wait for the US Open.
I can't wait for the blue pickle, man.
All right, that's more than enough. Sorry, viewers, listeners, for putting you through that. That was quite disgusting. But we're going to get on to our Miami review, and we're mixing it up again this week, and we're going WTA first. That's coming right up.
30. And we are back talking about the Miami Open, some tennis now. Blue pickle conversation is over, and we're going to start with the WTA. And what better way to start, right, than with the final match between world number one Aryna Sabalenka defeating world number four Jessica Pegula 7-5, 6-2, their third final on U.S. soil in the past, what, like 6-7 months? They played Cincinnati, U.S. Open, and now Miami. Another straight set wins for Sabalenka. Actually, she didn't lose a set the whole tournament. Thoughts?
I didn't watch it.
Didn't watch the game. All right.
it was not one of the ones that I watch highlights for either. I looked at their roads to the final in a little bit. Yeah, good job, Pegula, making another final, but just not good enough when it gets to the creme de la creme. Hey, but one thing I will say, what did I say on our last episode, who was going to win the women's title? I said Aryna Sabalenka, and I was proved right, and I didn't watch a minute of her play. So,
well, I actually watched, well, I watched the whole final, and then I watched a few of the matches that she took part in. And honestly, I think the bit that surprised me the most about Sabalenka is how she has become so versatile. You know, she used to be very much a serve and power kind of player. I wouldn't say she was ever a serve bot because that's not really how she wins games, but it was so power dominant. And this time, especially the second set, the first set was weird because they kept breaking each other. Nobody really seemed to want to win it. But the second set, when Sabalenka just started slicing balls and going up to the net and a lot of angled winners, not a lot of just straight power. And I think that's because Pegula, as much as I think she has improved over the last year, because 2 years ago, she wasn't making finals at these big events the way that she is consistently now. But she plays the perfect ball for Sabalenka. Straight down the middle with depth, it gives Sabalenka time to like run around it, hit a forehand, put angles on it, do whatever she wants with it. She has a really big Sabalenka problem, which, you know, is fine. She's the best player in the world. She now reached 10,000 points on the WTA rankings. Iga, world number two, is like 3,000 points behind with about a buttload of points to defend on clay. So realistically, I think my shout would be that she's going to finish the whole year. She's going to be world number one for the whole year. She does have a lot of points to defend towards the back end of the season, but with the way she's been playing and the way that Iga has sort of, I wouldn't say fallen off because she's still getting good results, just by her standards is not what we expect out of Iga Świątek. But
yeah,
Sabalenka's been amazing. She's been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with Iga, right? She's not getting bad results. She's doing runs every tournament, but you expect trophies, and that's been missing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't really know what to say about Iga in this situation. I do agree with you. I don't think Iga's going to make that gap up, especially if she keeps playing the way that she does on grass and on hard. Okay, she might win the French Open, but she doesn't even gain any points then on mm-hmm. Sabalenka. So unless Sabalenka has a really bad tournament. Because I believe she made quarterfinals
she
last
did.
Year. So she could she lose did. She could lose a fair amount of points there. But yeah, it's what stood out to me in the women's draw. Let's have a look here. Yeah, Rybakina, another early exit. But I got to be honest, I think this was less of a, oh, Rybakina's, you know, not playing too well. She's, blah, you know, all the drama, stuff like that. She's lost to someone who I think whose ranking is probably lower than it should be and is actually a better player than what that suggests. So she lost to Ashlyn Kruger, who is 20 years of age. She's also 6'1". Absolute
damn
giant for the women's game. Yeah, 6'1". Because not many players are matching Rybakina on height. So she does that, and she ended up also beating Leila Fernandez, I think, in the next round, and then eventually lost to Qin Nguyen in the round of 16,
I think. Yeah, because I think Qin Nguyen lost in the quarters.
Yeah. I think someone to watch there is Ashlyn Kruger. I saw the highlights for this game, and it wasn't like Rybakina was playing a particularly bad game, and she won the second set, and then Kruger still found a way to win the third set. Just was the better player, I think, on the day. So I don't think you can put that down to too much of the off-court drama or just the fact that she hasn't played as much tennis as maybe she has in the past. Yeah.
No, yeah, I agree with you. And to sort of go on to another young sensation, we got to talk about Alexandra Ayala, 19 years old, gets a hat trick of Grand Slam champion wins, defeating Ostapenko and then Madison Keys. Paula Badosa withdrew from her match, but then she beat Iga Świątek in straight sets to make the semifinal as a 19-year-old. In case you didn't know, which I didn't know before I did this, she was world junior number 2. She won a junior slam. But I think what impressed me the most is her mentality. Like she was always ice cold, you know? She never let any moment get bigger than what it was. Against Iga, she went down a break. Her first serve, she lost. She was down one love in the first set. And usually, like, when Iga breaks you when you first serve, like, she's running away with it. And then she beat her 6-2 in that set. Like, and I think I really like her game, the way that she constructs points really smart. Like, you're getting these sort of players now that are coming in who maybe don't have the physical acumen that other teenagers used previously to dominate the game, such as Alcaraz, who was physically a specimen at 18 already or 19. She's not really physically impressive, but her game is so smart, the way she constructs points, the depth, the angles, and she's a killer. Like, you give her half a chance, she's going for a winner. And in Miami, it was hitting. She was hitting all these winners. Like, she was playing out of her mind. And I think what's impressive is that she could have an even better season now, because she is a Rafa Nadal Academy graduate. So, you know, she's a clay merchant. And we're getting on to the clay season now. And I was so impressed with her. It's super cool. All the stuff she's already achieved at 19. Highest ranked Filipino woman. First Filipino woman to beat a top 10 player. First Filipino woman to reach a semifinal at a tour event. Like, she's basically the Philippines' greatest tennis player already. And she's had one good run. And that's amazing. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, if she wins a Grand Slam in her career at any point, she's going to be an absolute superstar in the Philippines.
Absolutely. You see it a lot with Asian players when they win, like Li Na when she won the Australian Open. Like, wow, that just blew her up. Even Qin Nguyen now, like, just getting to the final and winning Olympic gold just blew her up all over Asia. And the only thing is, she has a terrible serve. And I was surprised at how often she was holding serve. Because it's really not a good serve. It's not like she has a good first serve, bad second. She just does not have a serve at all, which is a little bit surprising because she's like 5'9", which is all right for the women's game. She's not short. She's at 175 cm for non-feet people that don't understand feet and stuff. So I think that she, I hope that this is not just a flash in the pan, because I really, really like watching her play tennis. And I think she's super cool. Right. I really like her personality. She's super humble, but she's a killer. So I really hope this is just the start of something special for her.
A lot of young women to watch. There's the field's already quite young. Iga is still relatively young. Coco is also young.
Yeah.
You have a lot of young players in there looking to do big things. Very exciting time for the WTA.
It's crazy. She's 19 and she's so young. But then Mira Andreeva is 17 and she just won back-to-back 1,000. So like, it kind of makes the age thing less impressive.
Yeah, Mira Andreeva is there as well. Yeah. I also want to touch on Emma Raducanu. She had a pretty good tournament for the first time in a while. Managed to win a marathon against Emma Navarro. I think they played 2 hours, 50-something minutes. And then eventually lost in the quarterfinals to Pegula. Nothing to be scoffed at, you know. Eventual finalist Pegula. So, yeah, a pretty good performance there from someone who's been lacking, who, kind of like Naomi Osaka, hasn't been able to put together the comeback like I think she had hoped and a lot of her fans had hoped. So, yeah, really nice to see her back and looking a little better than she has in the past. Yeah,
I agree. It was good to see her again. Also, Paolini made the quarterfinals. That was good to see. I think she hasn't had the start of the year that we were all hoping for, but to see her reach a quarterfinal of a big tournament, sort of like, okay, she's still here. Even though she just, well, break up is not the right word, but she just ended her stint with her coach of 10 years. So we'll see what she's hoping to get out of her game. Something extra, I guess, because maybe she does feel like there's more for me to gain here. So hopefully the change is something that, yeah, brings out even more out of her, that she's already achieved so much in the last year. I'm interested to see how that goes.
I also noticed that Coco Gauff managed a double bagel against Sofia Kenin, won a game in 47 minutes, and then I believe she lost 2 rounds later.
Yeah, to Magda Linette. Yeah. Yeah, Coco is still, I think Coco and Iga are both players that are still finding themselves this year, where like, they'll definitely get past the first few rounds, but once you start seeing them against specific matchups, and the thing with Coco, I think it's very much on her racket. It still seems, you know, a lot of double faults. She's suddenly got the serving yips again. The forehand's not forehanding anymore, like it was at the beginning of the year and the end of last year. So I don't know. I hope that she can, find something now on clay. She's already made a French Open final before, so maybe now things slow down a bit, she can take advantage of it. But yeah, not the start of the year. In fact, if Pegula wins Charleston, which is going on this week, she does overtake Coco for number 3 in the world. And she's not that far from Iga at number 2 either. So those two are players that...
Yeah, I mean, the WTA top 10 must be so tight in terms of points, because Kin Nguyen, who was number 5 at one point, or was she higher? Was she number 3 at one point?
No, I think 5 was her peak, because Coco was still...
She's already dropped to number 9.
Yeah.
And Madison Keys, I think, was she like 13th or something going into the Australian Open and left number 5?
Yeah, so, and she's still 5 now, yeah.
I think you have Sabalenka, Iga sort of top 2 quite clearly, and then it's very tight between those next few. So, yeah, I mean, if Mira Andreeva can pull something together on the clay run, we could see her ranking jump again and again this year.
Absolutely, yeah. And she's already got a French Open semifinal. So clearly the clay is something that suits her. And the Mira Andreeva that we saw last year, it's not the Mira Andreeva we're seeing this year. She's definitely been hitting the weights. And shout out to her, actually. She won 3 straight Masters 1000. She won the doubles at Miami with Diana Schneider. So big up Mira Andreeva continuing her streak of 1,000s.
Nah, not really, though. Come on. Nah.
She did take part in the most aggro match of Miami against Amanda Anisimova that then led to some passive aggressive posts with some middle fingers in there and stuff. I love a little drama. I love a little drama.
Comes from the American woman once again. I don't want to be pointing any fingers, but in the past they have stirred up a fuss for relatively small things. Do you have anything else to add for the women? I think I've pretty much covered everything that I wanted to talk about.
I think so too. I think the Iga thing, you know, we touched on that. little, I don't know. I can't tell if I should be worried or not because clay season is coming, but she hasn't made a final since last year's French Open. Like, that is startling. Yeah. And I think that not only
I guess
the,
we'll find out.
Yeah,
you know?
We'll find out now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because.
And I think if it goes wrong in the clay season, I would not be surprised if we see coaching changes there.
Mm-hmm. And she already had one to start the year, you know. She already made a coaching change.
Oh,
and,
yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
seemingly was looking good because she was playing really well at the Australian Open and she lost to the eventual winner. So, you know, it's not nothing to like.
Yeah.
But then the rest of the season, like to not make a final, like that's. Which is crazy, the standard we've set for her as a player, that like she doesn't make a final. We're like, oh my God, she's bad. She's not bad. It's yeah. just that it's clear.
Exactly. She's not playing bad at all.
No. And I think the final thing is a little bit worrying. And I do think that we talked about it last episode, the Olympic loss to Ching Wen really affected her, but also the doping ban, I think, has really affected her, that she was banned for those 2-3 yeah. months and sort of the reaction. And people are always harsh on her because she's not,
yeah.
you know, she's a little bit reserved. So anything she does, she's scrutinized. But, you know, almost hitting the ball boy also doesn't help her cause. And so hopefully she can fix her mentality or get help yeah. where she needs it so she can be the player we know she is.
I saw as well that Iga has pulled out of the Billie Jean King Cup for Poland. Specifically citing that she wanted to change her focus and focus a little bit more on herself, on her training. So, yeah, and I think that's a big move for her because she has put so much, I think, physical and emotional effort into supporting Poland or playing for Poland in the past. So, yeah, I think that's a big move. I think it's probably the right move as well. A lot of players do this. Mm-hmm. It's only the qualifying round as well, so I'm not sure. Maybe she can join in later in the season. So yeah, I think that's probably a good decision going into clay season with her form, or just maybe not even her form, maybe just her mentality, the way mm-hmm. that it is, you know, where she's struggling to win big matches or struggling to win big matches and get over hurdles that previously would have been a walk in the park for her. So yeah.
Yeah,
just
to touch on that, I think that could be a double-edged sword because I think maybe what she needs to find is enjoying playing tennis again, which I don't think she's finding. And a lot of players talk about how these team settings help you find that again, this camaraderie, because you're always alone, you know, you're always alone. You're always, even if you're playing against a fellow Polish player, like it's still you versus another player. It doesn't matter. You're both Polish, but in your a team environment, people are supporting you. So maybe it could have helped her, but I don't know. I do hope that this is the best move for her. And I mean, she knows what's good for her. I don't. So, you know, who am I to say? Yeah. But yeah, I think that about wraps us up with the WTA. Congrats to Arina Sabalenka on her 8th Masters 1000 title. Let me make sure I got that right. Yes, it is her 8th Masters 1000 title. And we'll see what she does on clay.
Alrighty then, back into it with the ATP. Also, didn't watch a lot of this either, but like I said, the American time zone is just—it's just tough. I've been busy; it's hard to watch tennis. But I did do a fair amount of highlights watching for this one. I think I've got some interesting takes to get into. First up, he seems to—we always talk about him, but I think we always talk about him for good reason. What happened to Alcaraz? You know, I looked at the highlights and I looked at the stats, and it's hard to really pinpoint exactly what went wrong. I think maybe David Goffin had a really good game, or at least it looked that way. It looked like he was chasing down a lot of balls. It looked like he was able to keep the rally going more than maybe some other players would against Alcaraz. Because, yeah, there really wasn't anything in the stats that I was like, ah. You know, and it's hard to get an idea of the full game from the highlights. But yeah, David Goffin's shot making was really good. Carlos's serve didn't look particularly off or anything like that. Yeah, it was. And he was doing Carlos-like stuff. He's always doing Carlos-like stuff. He's always doing ridiculous shots, ridiculous pickups. Hands at the net looked really good. Yeah, I'm just wondering if you saw anything else that maybe stood out to you as to why he lost to the player who I would say is over the hill in terms of their career?
Yeah, absolutely. But David Goffin has beaten Alcaraz before, so it could just be a matchup thing. How deep he hits the ball maybe doesn't give Alcaraz the time he needs to sort of do like his big power windups and all the stuff that he likes to do. But he is a player with a lot of diversity and versatility, so you wouldn't necessarily think. And he played Novak Djokovic, the GOAT of putting the ball deep right at your feet, and he's defeated him many times before. So honestly, I think that Alcaraz right now is a little bit stale. And I, even though he's gotten a lot, and without Juan Carlos Ferrero, he's likely not at the position he's at now. But I think it's time for a change for Alcaraz. I think he needs to change coach to see something new. And I'm not saying like, oh, hire Goran so you improve your serve. No, just hire a guy who fits with you and who can help you grow. All the greats have done it, you know. Roger did it. Like, he changed from his childhood coach that won him slams to like, I need to improve, I need to get better if I want to keep this level. And he did it many times throughout his career. Novak has done it as well. And, you know, it shouldn't be a decision that's like with hard feelings. It's just what is better for Alcaraz. And I think for Alcaraz right now, it's better to move on and look for something new. Sinner has also changed team already, and look at what it did for him, you know. So I think he's just a little bit stale right now, where, you know, you're just getting the same message over and over again. And eventually that message is like, yeah, okay, like, this isn't doing anything for me anymore.
So I want to bring up my kind of my only sort of hot take that I have this week, if you will. And earlier in this week, we were talking about João Fonseca. Yeah. And you had mentioned that the hype around this guy is kind of crazy. He hasn't really won anything yet. Yet the tennis world can't seem to stop talking about him. But I'm not going to talk about João Fonseca here. And the reason that we thought that this was happening was because of the João Fonseca play style. It's very exciting. It's hard hitting. It's fun to watch. My hot take is, are we seeing the same effect with Carlos Alcaraz, perhaps? Where, you know, the hype train, I mean, obviously there's reason for the hype, but the way that we watch Carlos Alcaraz play and the way that we talk about him, you and I included, is that he will be Novak Federer Rafa level of slams by the time his career is done. And Novak Federer Rafa level of tournament wins by the time he's done. But if we look at his results recently, and not just recently, like throughout his entire career, he keeps losing to players that he should be beating in tournaments. And to be fair, I might be completely eating my words in a couple months when he does the Channel Slam again. But I feel like he needs to start showing it on a more regular basis if at the end of his career he wants to be seen on the level as those guys. I think he's already a great, like he is already going to go down as a great, great tennis player in history. But yeah, for some reason, he keeps losing to these lower ranked players. And it doesn't make any sense, because I think it's got to be a mental thing, because he seems to step up when he plays players like, he has a winning record against Sinner, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah. He does. He didn't lose to him all of last year, and Sinner had like a historic year last year. Like,
exactly. So like, the guy has incredible talent. He just needs to find a way to tap into that on a regular basis. So yeah. What do you think of that in terms of Carlos Alcaraz hype maybe needing to tone down a little bit if he keeps this up?
I mean, I think that that's a very reasonable hot take, to be honest, because he obviously came out firing, you know, youngest ever world number one, youngest ever year-end number one, youngest ever guy to win a slam across three surfaces. He's only one away from completing the career slam if he wins the Australian Open, and he's won 1,000s and he's done all this. Obviously, he's got an insane resume considering how long he's been on tour. But I do agree, especially with the way that Sinner has evolved. If you ask me right now to bet on who's going to end up with more slams, I would go with Sinner. And Carlos Alcaraz is my favorite player. But I would go with Sinner because Sinner is consistent. And this is outside of like, oh, well, there's two hardcourt slams and he's really good at hardcourt. Like, I think Sinner could very easily win the French Open this year after having a 3-month layoff. Like, in fact, he's probably going to be my favorite heading into it, to be honest. Like, unless he comes into Rome and he looks like he, and he's fat or something, you know, like, unless he comes into Rome super out of shape and does not look like the guy who won the Australian Open, I don't see why I would pick against Sinner, even on clay.
All right. Good. I was wondering how you would feel about that take there.
No, that's, I agree. It's just the consistency levels. He needs to be able, I'm not saying like reach Wimbledon 2024 finals levels of consistency, because I think even he knows he can't play that well every single match, but at least find a floor that you're comfortable with winning. Because I agree, you can't be losing to Botic, Van de Zandschulp, or David Goffin, or some of the other cats that he's been losing to recently. You know, losing to Novak in the quarterfinal of the Australian Open, okay, that's fine, it is what it is. But like, even then, like, it is what it is. Like, Novak is almost like, he's almost like a pensioner, you know? So like, I think Sinner would have wiped the floor with Novak if they played in the quarterfinal, for example, of the Australian Open. So yeah, I think it's definitely a reason for concern. And maybe that is something that changes with a coaching change. It just gives him a higher floor, a little bit more confidence when things are not going his way, that he can still win a match.
So I want to touch on as well a couple of predictions that we made, or statements that we made in our last episode about a couple players, namely Medvedev, Draper, and Rune.
Mm.
I think we agreed on that Medvedev's run last time out in Indian Wells was probably going to be a one-off, because some of the players that he came up against, he seemed to get a bit of the luck of the draw in that outing, and we were very much proved right here. What did he lose in the second round?
Yeah, he lost. I think all the Indian Wells semifinalists lost in their first match. So Draper, Rune, Medvedev, Alcaraz.
I think 6-2, 6-3 or something like that against Munar. A couple of things I picked out of the stats. Pretty much all the problems that we said last week. You know, the guy has no weapons all of a sudden. He has no serve. 1 ace to 4 double faults and just 58% of first serves in play. And, that might be first serve points won. And then, you know how ATP, they do these return ratings. You've got a serve rating, you've got a return rating and stuff like that. I believe it's out of 300. I think that's the absolute max that you can do. But to put this in perspective, Medvedev's return rating in that game that he lost was 55. His opponent's was 158. And Alcaraz, when he lost to David Goffin, was 130.
Oh my
55
God.
Is stupid low. And that's because he stands behind 15 feet behind the baseline. Against, no matter who's serving against them. I don't know whether it's he doesn't have the confidence to play the shots that he used to, or whether there's just something fundamentally wrong with his game at the moment, or a mixture of both. He just can't seem to get it going. And it's all the problems that you pointed out last week. He just can't hit a winner. He seems to be playing kind of well when he comes into the net. Which is good, but you got to be able to attack from the baseline as well, so you're able to come to the net. So, yeah, another disappointing display.
Yeah.
And then Draper, we said he'd lose early. He did. Rune, we said he'd lose early, and he did. But little caveats on those. Draper lost to the eventual winner in Mensik, and Rune lost to Opelka, who has already claimed a couple of big scalps this year, is no slouch. No,
especially
himself.
On a fast Miami court, when that serve is firing like
big
that,
server. Yeah,
forget it. Like, it's going to be impossible to beat the guy. And just to touch on Medvedev, a thing that I've been thinking about recently is he just declining because of his age? Because we're so used to seeing Roger, Novak, Rafa go deep into their 30s, still competing for slams, still being in finals like Novak, still winning titles. But actually, like, you know, a regular tennis player probably starts to fall off around the time Medvedev is, around the age Medvedev is now. And because he's still, well, now he's outside of the top 10, if I'm not mistaken, which is insane for a guy who last year made the Australian Open final and was still considered like a top five player in the world. Like, we're starting to see the issues, but not to this level. But it could just be that he's declining because he's getting old, because he's, you know, he, that's just, Andy Murray also kind of started to fall off around his early 30s, you know, the same way that most regular tennis players do.
I mean, the difference though with Andy Murray is that you saw it because he was out with injuries and he went and he had to have surgeries and stuff like that. Whereas Medvedev hasn't really had any time out for injuries. And maybe it's a case of he has to take some time out to just recuperate, and because the tennis schedule is a grueling thing. And maybe he just needs some time out to also regroup mentally as well. I think that also might be a problem. And I think he maybe needs a coaching change as well, because his game is so one-dimensional at the moment and it doesn't seem to be getting any better.
No, yeah, I agree. I don't want to confirm it, but I think I did see that he did make a coaching change now. Potentially, we would have to double check that. So, but yeah, I agree. Just, he's got to change something up, because his serve is gone. His biggest weapon, which was his serve, is gone, because the rally tolerance is still there to an extent, but now there's no winners in it. So if you give a guy a sliver, like, they're going to take it, and Medvedev is showing that he can't really cope with that.
All right, so I'm going to throw it over you for this next pick. Do you want to talk about Mensik, the eventual winner of the men's side of the tournament?
Yes, let's talk about the Czech phenom, 19 years old, Jakub Mensik, defeating Novak Djokovic 7-6, 7-6 for his first career ATP title. Happens to be a 1,000, pretty good start to your career. And, you know, he showed out. He beat some huge names. Not only did he beat his idol, Novak Djokovic, in the final, he beat Fritz in the semis, he beat Arthur Fields, he beat Jack Draper in Jack Draper's first match. And he did it in a very serve body way. He won 7 tie breaks to the title, which is a first for a 1,000 champion to win 7 tie breaks en route to your 1,000 title. But he was so on it. The serve was super on it. The placement was great. The power is great, but the placement is what really stands out with him. You know, these guys who, like, a little bit like Nick Kyrgios, were like, okay, the power is not there sometimes, but man, this guy just finds the lines every time with the serve. And he became the 5th youngest winner in 1,000 history, which is kind of crazy because he's only 19. So how is there 4 guys that were younger than him? But, and, you know, it probably has to do with the fact that he's built like a UFC light heavyweight contender rather than a tennis player. But I often forget that he's 19 and he does not get the level of hype the likes of Lerner Tien, João Fonseca. I was going to say Arthur Fields, but even he doesn't get the hype he deserves for being an under 20 player.
It's because he's Czech, bro.
It's because Mensik is probably Czech, and he has a terrible trim. I'm sorry. Like, that mullet, whatever he's rocking, bro, we got to switch that up. Because he took off the hat in the final and I was like, oh, Jesus, put the hat back on, bro.
But, let me check this thing out.
He's got like a weird...
I must have had a new trim.
Yeah, he's got like a sort of mullet with a sort of faux hawk going on top. It's quite interesting.
I rate it. It's good. It's good, man. Nice,
it's
trim.
All right. It's all right. And I think, yeah, you know, he's still... Obviously, for a 19-year-old, he's not the complete package. I think his forehand could use a lot of work. But with that serve, with that backhand, with the mentality to win 7 tiebreaks at this age against the players that he won them against, and playing his idol in the final and not absolutely breaking it like most 19-year-olds would. And not just your idol, you're playing the greatest player of all time in his favorite 1,000 tournament that he's won 6 times, going for title 100. There's just so much context to it. And he was a 19 years old player trying to win your first trophy. And he beat him in 2 tiebreaks. Like, that is not easy to do against Novak Djokovic. So I give him a lot of props. He definitely win a slam in the future. I just don't know, other than a hard court slam, if I would really rate him on anything else. He moves well considering how big he is, but he's not like, you know, he's not an exceptional mover or something. And the grass without such a great forehand, I worry that the low bounce and that, like, it could catch up to him. But, you know, if he's on a hot run like this, of course, best of five is different to best in three. But if he's serving like this, like, he's a problem for everybody. Not a slam, just for anybody. I think he could trouble anybody. So I'm really happy for him. It's cool to see another sort of, like, because you have the new gen of Sinner and Alcaraz, and now there's even like a new gen of like João Fonseca, Mensik, Lerner Tien. So it's good to see these guys not just breaking through, but actually taking part and cementing themselves as like big players. Like, now Mensik is a 1000 winner. Jack Draper, who I'd probably put in the Sinner Alcaraz sort of realm of next gen, if you will, but also him. So I'm super excited to see what comes from this.
Yeah, well said. I don't really have anything to add on that. I didn't watch too much of this tournament, and I'm looking forward to the European swing again so I can get back into it.
Yeah, and this final was tough, man, because it was meant to start at like 8 p.m. Yeah, and it went it started at 3 a.m. So I also didn't watch this game. I watched the highlights next day.
No, I was planning to watch this one, and I was sitting there in front of my laptop for 2 hours begging for them to start, and then realized that the women's doubles hadn't even finished yet.
Yeah, I went to check if it started, and it said Andreeva Schneider up 3-love, and they played for 3 hours and 35 minutes. I'm like, what? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, so that was a bit of a shame on the last day. But a couple more things that I picked up through the tournament. My predictions were kind of pretty good on both sides. I said Sabalenka, Djokovic to win. Djokovic just falling at the last hurdle. I also predicted, we were out the night that Seb Korda was going to play Stefanos Tsitsipas, and you mentioned it, and I said, oh, that Tsitsipas is losing that game. He did. And I know exactly why that is, because the man is not the rating that he's a top 30 player. He's not a top 20 player. He's a top 30 guy.
Watch. So he's going to win. He's going to win Monte Carlo again and prove everybody wrong, man. Everybody talking shit about my boy Steph. They don't know what's coming, man. Clay season, baby. French Open winner. Let's go.
We got the gambler's dream matchup, Safulin. If you listen to our Australian Open podcast, we both picked a gambler's dream, someone that was meant to be, you know, low down on the odds, but could do something amazing. Both of them lost immediately, but they matched up in this one, Safulin versus Alexei Popyrin. And Safulin won.
Let's go.
I think we can award the Gambler's Dream Award to you now, because they finally come together and they won, because they didn't really do anything to decide that award when they played in Australia. Yeah, they just lost.
I'm picking him again for the French Open, man. I'm telling you, this time he's going to do something. This time he's going to do something.
He's going to win under his belt. He's good to go. Last thing I picked up on as well was a really good run for Berrettini. Mm-hmm. Only to lose narrowly to Taylor Fritz. I hope this is a sign of things to come. I would love to see him back in top form again. So, yeah.
Oh, and that was the match of the tournament. Berrettini against Fritz was insane. I think Berrettini saved something like 6 match points in the second set and then won it and then went to a third. And the third was, the quality still stayed very high. I was super impressed. And I think Berrettini's been having a good year in general. So, and I think the last thing we have to talk about, as always, what about Novak Djokovic, you know? Is he back?
Do we need to talk about this? Final performance, nothing wrong with it. Lost to probably the better player on the day. I mean, he's a young cat. Is he back? Wait for the Grand Slam, because that's when he's going to want it more than ever. That's the last thing he wants. 100th title? Yeah. 25th Grand Slam?
I mean, it would be hot as well to get your 100th title, and it's also your 25th slam. Because that means a quarter of your... To win 100 titles is ridiculous, but a quarter of those titles being Grand Slams is even stupider. Like, that would be such an insane stat.
While we're on this, does he have a better chance of getting it at the French Open or Wimbledon?
I would say Wimbledon. I think Clay
still.
Yeah, because I think Clay has too many dogs that could do something. You know, you have Alcaraz, right. Zverev could do something. Casper Ruud has made back-to-back
Sebastian Baez,
but he's bad on European clay, man. Like, I don't think there's probably a difference.
He's only good on South America.
He's only good on fucking like ole 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 clay, bro. Like, that's only clay.
Gotta have that humidity in there.
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, I don't think I think his French Open, his best result is like a fourth round or something. You know who we do have to watch? If we're talking Argentinians, man. Francisco Cerundolo, back-to-back quarterfinals, Indian Wells and Miami. Big up Francisco Cerundolo. I think on clay, he could be dangerous. I know Echeverri has made a French Open quarterfinal before Cerundolo, but I rate Cerundolo. I think he's having good results. Results that he wasn't having before against players that are ranked higher than him. You know, I'm not saying that this guy is going to suddenly become some like weapon because he's already like 26, 27. Like, you know, this is probably around his peak, but at least he's showing out. He's performing well on the hard courts. So we'll see on clay. But yeah, to go back to my Novak chat, I think on grass right now, other than Alcaraz, because he's a back-to-back champ, I don't really think that there's, you know, Sinner has had pretty good results in his career on grass, but he's yet to even make a final there. So we know Zverev is really bad at Wimbledon. He's got, what's his best, like fourth round? Is his like career best in that slam? Like, I don't really see, and with the way he's playing, no fucking way he's making the final. So yeah, I think that this Novak, it will be Wimbledon. And I think that, honestly, he did make the final this time, but he played guys who he loves to play against. So he played Musetti and Dimitrov, who he has ridiculous head-to-head records against. And if Fritz would have beat Mensik, he would have played a guy who he's like 14-0 against in the final. So, pinch of salt on the run. A little bit like the Wimbledon run last year, which looks impressive because of his knee injury. But if you look at the opponents he played, it was a very easy run for him. And I know you can't pick who you play against, but it does factor into my thoughts of, is Novak back or not?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I think we'll just have to wait and see. Yeah. I think that pretty much wraps us up for the day. Do you want to sign us off out of here?
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you very much for joining us. Please send us your suggestions for American foods you would like to try. And if you have tried any of our top three, especially the blue pickle, please let us know in our comments or DM us, whatever you prefer. If you're embarrassed...
On that, if anyone has a blue pickle, send it through. Yeah, I'm not going to give my address on here, but...
No, we don't have a P.O. box. We're not that big.
Yeah, we don't have a P.O. box. Just send it through the ether.
DM like, me, and we can find a way to get that blue pickle in my house. And yeah, be on the lookout for some more episodes coming your way. Hopefully a little clay season preview. And, you know, clay season is coming, so it is time for... I'd probably say my favorite time of the year in tennis. I think from now until Wimbledon, I love this time because hard courts are boring. I see them too much. Get them out of here. So thank you very much for joining us for another episode of Cross Courts Conversations. We will be back with you soon. Take care. Peace.